Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News, Monday, October 31st, 2022. I'm Naima Latif, and in the news today, Rainbow Push is sending water to the residents of Jackson, Mississippi. Today in Chicago, Reverend Jesse L. Jackson Sr. held a press conference at the Rainbow Push Coalition National Headquarters at 930 East 50th Street in Chicago to announce and send off a truckload of bottled water to Jackson, Mississippi. Mississippi often places last on state lists for everything from health to income, given that 23% of the city of Jackson's population falls below the poverty line. The city of Jackson is 82% black, and yet the city is the state capital, said Reverend Jackson. One can only speculate why other parts of the state get resources, revenue, and responses quicker, faster, and disproportionately more than Jackson, Mississippi. Clean water to drink, to bathe, to cook, to take your medicine, to hydrate your body should not be politicized and or weaponized, Reverend Jackson stated. It is immoral and inexcusable why the government and the state legislature have acted in such an inhumane manner in fixing this problem. Clean water matters, says Reverend Jackson. Bishop Tavis Grant, the acting national executive director, said, "It is as if there are two different states, the state of Jackson and the state of Mississippi. You cannot marginalize the long-term impact this crisis is having on education, health care, and the quality of life for those who live in the cycles of despair and desperation every day. Our Keep Hope Alive Jackson Relief Drive is meant to respond and be proactive in creating a pipeline of immediate resources from Chicago to Mississippi that cannot be cut off," Bishop Grant stated. He said, "Our partners include Mr. Larry Huggins of Right Way Construction, Mr. Seamus Wright Jr. of Insignia Real Estate Company, LLC, along with the local partnership in Jackson of the Reverend Jose Hines, senior pastor of the Christ Tabernacle Church, and a New Day Coalition for Equity and Black America, ANCEBA, all of which stepped up and showed up to answer the call of Reverend Jackson to send trucks of water to Jackson, Mississippi. We're prepared and committed to send more. Environmental racism must be addressed to end unequal access to basic environmental resources," said Bishop Grant. "People of color are disproportionately victimized by environmental hazards and are far more likely to live in communities that are plagued with poverty, pollution, and companies that put profits over people. This humanitarian effort only goes to highlight the need to address climate justice as a fight we can win," Bishop Grant said. Reverend Jesse L. Jackson Sr. and Bishop Tavis Grant held an 11 o'clock a.m. press conference today, Monday, October 31st, at the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters at 930 East 50th Street, and announced the send-off of their second truckload of bottled water to Jackson, Mississippi. Rainbow Push Coalition is a multiracial, multi-issue, progressive international organization that was formed in December of 1996 by the Reverend Jesse L. Jackson Sr., through merging of two organizations he founded, Operation Push, People United to Serve Humanity, established 1971, and the Rainbow Push Coalition, established 1984, with headquarters in Chicago and offices in Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Detroit, Houston, Los Angeles, New York, and Oakland, The organization works to make the American dream a reality for all citizens while advocating for peace and justice around the world. RPC is dedicated to improving the lives of all people by serving as a voice for the voiceless. Its mission is to protect, defend, and gain civil rights by leveling the economic and educational playing fields while promoting peace and justice around the world. For more information, go to www.rainbowpush.org. There are a number of people around the country that are concerned about issues such as good drinking water, and they're also concerned about what those who are striving to gain their support for the election are planning to do when it comes to those municipal decisions. Also, a topic of concern is the safety and security of the schools. With recent school shootings, a number of elected officials have come out in one position or another regarding gun violence and whether or not there needs to be additional legislation to address the availability of assault weapons. Most states have had some incident that brings to the forefront the availability of these weapons and the lack of adequate background checks, the lack of adequate security measures to protect children from guns that are even legally held in the home. This is an issue that voters need to pay attention to as they go to the polls. Early voting in Illinois started on Monday, October 24th, and continues up until the day before the election. Wherever you are, check your mail to see where your polling place may be. And if there are changes in your polling place as a result of redistricting, check with your local Board of Election. It's a citizen's responsibility to make sure they know where to go when it comes to exercising their right to vote. Today is recognized for many as Halloween, even though there were those who decided to begin early with Halloween celebrations and recognizing the celebration and the acknowledgement of the day. Those who had held events also held in mind the need for security for children out trick-or-treating, and also the need for parents to be more aware of the dangers posed by children going to areas where they may not have adequate supervision. There are those who are looking at the history of Halloween and whether or not it is healthy to continue to focus on that which promotes the ghoulish side of death. According to the World History Encyclopedia, the history of Halloween shows that it's among the oldest traditions in the world, as it touches on an essential element of the human condition, the relationship between the living and the dead. The observance evolved from ancient rituals marking the transition from summer to winter, thereby associating it with transformation, which is still a central theme of the holiday. Every recorded civilization has created some form of ritual observance focused on what happens to people when they die, where they go, and how the living should best honor those who have passed or respond to the dead who seem unwilling or unable to move on. Countries around the world today celebrate Halloween in one form or another, from Mexico's Day of the Dead to China's Tomb Sweeping Day. The modern-day observance of Halloween in countries such as the United States and Canada, where this tradition is most popular, share in this ancient tradition, even though some aspects of the holiday are relatively recent developments and can be traced back to the Celtic festival of Samhain. Christian groups throughout the years have routinely attempted to demonize and denigrate the observance, in part by repeating the erroneous claim that Samhain was the Celtic god of the dead and Halloween his feast. This error comes from the 18th century British engineer Charles Valancy, who wrote on the Samhain festival with a poor understanding of the culture and language and has been repeated uncritically since. It was actually the church itself, however, which preserved the Samhain tradition in the West by Christianizing it in the 9th century, setting the course for a pagan Northern European religious tradition's transformation into a worldwide secular holiday, which has become the most popular and commercially lucrative of the year, second only to Christmas. Regarding Samhain, Halloween traditions in the West date back thousands of years to the festival of Samhain, Samhain or Samhain, the Celtic New Year's festival. The name means summer's end, and the festival marked the close of the harvest season and the coming of winter. The Celts believed that the veil between the worlds of the living and the dead was thinnest at this time, and so the dead could return and walk where they had before. Further, those who had died in the past year and who, for one reason or another, had not yet moved on could do so at this time and might interact with the living in saying goodbye. The observance of Samhain, as it is said, is pronounced, included stocking up of supplies for the winter, slaughtering cattle, and disposing of the bones in bone fires. Very little is known of the rituals of ancient Samhain because the church Christianized it, as with many pagan festivals, and what information is available comes from Irish monks who recorded the pre-Christian history of their people as well as other Christian scribes, denigrating pagan rites. It seems, however, that the observance included, again, stocking up supplies for the winter, slaughtering cattle, and disposing of the bones in bonfires, which in time came to be known as bonfires. There were gatherings of communities for feasting and drinking while this was going on, but there was also the awareness of the thin time of the year and the possibility of otherworldly visitors showing up at the party. Departed loved ones were expected and welcomed, and the practice of setting out favorite foods for the dead may have originated as early as 2,000 years ago, although this is unclear. But many other kinds of spirits, some which never had human form, could also appear. Elves, fairy, the quote, wee folks, sprites, and dark energies were just as likely to pay a visit as those one longed to see again last time. Further, there was a very good chance that the spirit of a person one may have wronged would also make an appearance. In order to deceive the spirits, people darkened their faces with ashes from the bonfires, a practice later known as guising, and this developed into wearing masks. A living person would recognize the spirit of a loved one and could then reveal themselves, but otherwise remain safe from the unwanted attention of darker forces. How did it evolve into All Hallows' Eve? How long ago these rituals were included in the observance of Samhain is unknown, but some form of them were probably in place by the time Christianity came to Ireland in the 5th century. The hill of Talachiga, Hill of the Ward, in County Meath, was the site of the bonfire lighted on or around the 31st of October, signaling the beginning of Samhain festivities. When it was answered by the much more prominent fire from the Neolithic site of the Hill of Tara across from it, archaeologists from University College Dublin have dated the excavated earthworks to 200 Christian era. But note, these are only the latest developments at a site first used for ceremonial fires over 2,000 years ago. The hill is named for the Druids. Talachiga, daughter of the powerful Druid Mug Ruas, who traveled the world learning his craft. She was raped by the three sons of Simon Magus, infamous for his confrontation with St. Peter in the biblical book of Acts, chapter 8, verse 9 through 24, and gave birth to triplets on the hill that bears her name before dying there. The inclusion of a biblical villain in her story obviously places the legend in the Christian era and aligns Talachiga with St. Peter, and so far as they shared a common adversary. Scholars believe that the Talachiga story, like so many Celtic legends, was Christianized after the coming of St. Patrick to Ireland, and her rape by the sons of Simon Magus was added to a pre-existing account. The Christianization of pagan symbols, temples, festivals, legends, and religious iconography as well established and applies to the Samhain festivals, as well as many others. Pope Boniface IV had set 13th of May as All Saints Day, All Hallows Day, a feast day to celebrate those saints who did not have a day of their own. In the 7th century, when he consecrated the great pagan temple of the Pantheon in Rome to St. Mary and Christian martyrs. But in the 8th century, Pope Gregory III moved the date of the feast to the 1st of November. The motivation for this move is still debated. Some scholars claim it was done intentionally to Christianize Samhain by turning it into All Hallows Eve, which is most likely true as the move follows an established Christian paradigm of redeeming all things pagan in an effort to ease the conversion process of a given population. Prior to Christianization, the 13th of May had been the last day of the Roman festival of Lemuria, which ran the 9th, 11th, and 13th of May, dedicated to placating the angry or restless dead. The festival developed from a pair of observances held earlier in the year, Parentalia, which honored the spirits of one's ancestors, 13th to 21st of February, and Feralia, which honored the spirits of loved ones lost, on the 21st of February. On Feralia, the living were obligated to remember and visit the graves of the dead and leave them gifts in the form of grains, salt, bread soaked in wine, and wreaths, accompanied by violet petals. Other influences on the development of Halloween. Well, as it was with Parentalia, Feralia, and Lemuria, and others, so it was with Samhain. Previously, the Samhain festival was associated with all those who had gone on before, and with the earth and the change of the year, this transformation was marked by celebration and communal activities. Once the festival was Christianized, All Hallows Eve became a night of vigil, prayer, and fasting in preparation for the next day, which when the saints were honored as a far tamer celebration. The old ways had not died out, however, and bonfires were still lighted, only now in honor of Christian heroes. And the turning of the seasons was still observed, only now to the glory of Christ. Many of the rituals which accompanied this new incarnation of the festival are unknown, but by the 16th century, the practice of souling had become integral. The poor of the town or city would go about knocking on doors asking for a soul cake, also known as a soul mass cake, in return for prayers. This practice is thought to have begun in response to the belief in purgatory, where it was thought a soul lingered in torment unless elevated by prayer and most often money paid to the church. After the Protestant Reformation, souling continued in Britain, only now the Protestant young and poor offered to pray for the people of the house and their loved ones instead of those in purgatory, while Catholics continued the older tradition. In the 17th century, Guy Fawkes Day added a new component to the development of Halloween. On the 3rd of November, 1605, a group of dissident Catholics tried to assassinate the Protestant King James I of Britain in an attempt known as the Gunpowder Plot. The attempt failed, and one of the group, Guy Fawkes, was caught with the explosives beneath the House of Lords, and although he had co-conspirators, his name attached itself famously to the plot. Guy Fawkes Day was celebrated by the Protestants of Britain as a triumph over popery, and 3rd of November became an occasion for anti-Catholic sermons and vandalism of Catholic homes and businesses, even though officially the government claimed it was a celebration of Providence sparing the king. On Guy Fawkes Night, bonfires were lit and unpopular figures, most often the Pope, were hanged in effigy while people drank, feasted, and set off fireworks. Children and the poor would go house to house, often wearing masks, pushing an effigy of Guy Fawkes in a wheelbarrow and begging for money or treats, while threatening vandalism if they were refused. So now the celebrations are coming to North America. When the British came to North America, they brought these traditions with them. The Puritans of New England, who refused to observe any holidays which might be associated with pagan beliefs, including Christmas and Easter, kept the observance of Guy Fawkes Day on the 5th of November as a reminder of their supposed moral superiority to Catholics. Guy Fawkes continued to be celebrated up until the American Revolution of 1775 through 1783. The rituals of Samhain arrived in the United States less than a century later with a displacement of the Irish in 1845 through 1849 during the potato famine. The Irish, largely Catholic, continued to observe All Hallows' Eve, All Saints' Day, and All Souls' Day, along with the practice of souling. But these festivals by now were infused with folk traditions such as the jack-o'-lantern. Further developments, the jack-o'-lantern is associated with the Irish folktale of Stingy Jack, a clever drunk and con man who fooled the devil into banning him from hell, but because of his sinful life, he could not enter heaven. After his death, he roamed the world carrying a small lantern made of a turnip with a red-hot ember from hell inside to light his way. Scholars believe this legend evolved from sightings of will-o'-the-wisp, swamp, and marsh gases, which glowed in a night. On All Hallows' Eve, the Irish hollowed out turnips and carved them with faces, placing a candle inside so that they went about consoling on the night when the veil between life and death was thinnest. They would be protected from spirits like Stingy Jack. The basics of Halloween were now in place, with people going from house to house asking for sweet treats in the form of the soul cakes and carrying jack-o'-lanterns. Shortly after their arrival in the United States, the Irish traded their turnip for the pumpkin as their lantern of choice, as it was much easier to carve. Guy Fawkes Day was no longer celebrated in the United States, but aspects of it attached themselves to the Catholic holidays of October, especially vandalism. Only now it was indiscriminate. Anyone's home or business could be vandalized around the 31st of October. In the village of Hiawatha, Kansas, the morning after Halloween in 1912, a woman named Elizabeth Krebs grew tired of having her garden and entire town vandalized once a year by marauding children wearing masks, and initially, using her own resources, organized a party in 1913 for the young people, where she hoped she would tire them out enough that they would have no energy for destruction. She underestimated their determination, however, and the community was vandalized as usual. In 1914, she involved the entire town, brought in a band, held a costume contest, and put on a parade, and her plan worked. People of all ages enjoyed a festive rather than disruptive Halloween. News of her success traveled outside of Kansas to other towns and cities, which adopted the same course and established Halloween parties, which included costume contests, parades, music, food, dancing, and sweet treats, accompanied by frightening decorations of ghosts and goblins. This familiar tradition of the present day dates to the 1950s Christian era and has steadily become popular in other countries. Although Ms. Krebs is sometimes cited as, quote, the mother of Halloween, of modern Halloween, this is not entirely true, as she did not institute the practice of going door-to-door asking for treats. This tradition was a few centuries old by the time she put on her first event. Mrs. Krebs' original vision definitely did impact how people in America celebrate Halloween. However, and the Halloween frolic of Hiawatha, Kansas, continues to be observed annually, along with the many similar festivals it inspired. So for those who are looking to either acknowledge Halloween as an American tradition, well, it has evolved into just that and has spread worldwide as a mishmash of many different European and other traditions, pagan in its origins and infused with many of the... Halloween is now a regularly celebrated and commercialized day observed on October 31st, involving children going house to house, begging for treats, wearing masks. So if you want to know where the origins of it is, there you have it, the history of Halloween. That's all for now. I'm Naima Latif, and you've been listening to On Air Daily News for Monday, October 31st, 2022. Join us Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, and wherever you are in the world, adjust your time so you can join us live and call us with your good news reports, 515-605-9749. That's 515-605-9749. When you see someone doing a good deed, we'd like to hear about it. Well, until tomorrow, we want you to enjoy the rest of your day. Stay safe on this Halloween.